Welcome to Plastering Talk Down Under, brought to you by Wallboard Tools. This podcast was created to start more conversations about key topics in the Australian plastering industry. My name is Ray Oxley, and I'm the Distribution Manager here at Wallboard. For those of you that are unfamiliar with Wallboard Tools, we are a leading supplier of plastering tools, trims, equipment in Australia, and have been established since 1976. On this week's episode, we are joined by our usual host, Mr. Lee Ryan, our technical specialist. This time, it's his turn to share a bit about his previous experience in owning a plastering company. So welcome, Lee.
Thanks, Ray. You should be good.
Should be good, mate. Should be good. Let's get cracking, hey?
Let's do it.
Can you tell me a little bit more about your background in the trade, please, mate?
So I started out as a fitter and turner when I was around 16, 17. And after finishing my time, I just didn't see myself sitting on a hard factory floor for the rest of my life. I tried a few different jobs, just trying to find something that I really enjoyed. And out of nowhere, I did a few days plastering to earn some extra money, mixed up a bit of base coat to do a patch. And I was just amazed at the hand skills and how the product set and finished off. After that, a friend was working for a company called Comseal Constructions, and he said it'd be a great company to work for. This would be my second apprenticeship, which people don't commonly do, but I enjoyed my working experience that much that I decided to become a plasterer. And I found all the different aspects of the trade engaging, from reading the plans, set outs, framing, hanging the plasterboard. It's a very skillful trade. Comseal at the time, they specialized in supermarket sort of new builds and refurb. I think nowadays they're called Clarity Building Group. Dean is the director and was a great mentor for me during my apprenticeship. And I'd encourage anyone to build a strong relationship with their boss. It really does sort of help you in your career. And I think I've spent the last 21 years in the plastering industry. I'd never have thought it'd taken me to different parts of the world, given me a great career path, and even just given me such great life experiences in general.
Yeah, fantastic. So two apprenticeships, mate. That's pretty out there.
Yeah, they used to call me two trades. So, and, you know, I used to get a bit of flack for it. Because
among other names, I guess.
Yeah. And some people don't even finish their trade. Like a lot of people sort of work within plastering and sort of start out as an apprentice, get their skills up, and then basically sort of go out on an ABN and start contracting, you know, like a lot of the industry is like that. So
yeah, most definitely.
For people to finish their trade, it's a bit rare.
Yeah. And you I know you've had your own business, so how long did you have your own plastering company for?
So I was a sole trader or subby for approximately 5 years after my apprenticeship, and I had my own company for about 2 years. The remainder of my time in the industry was really spent as a foreman or working for Knauf in Western Australia and now to Wallboard Tools here in Queensland.
Yeah, okay. Bit of a journey.
Yeah, and oddly enough, when I was first plastering, the first joint knife I ever would have picked up would have been a Wallboard Tool, you know, like, and to think now that when I started my trade, I was using those tools and here I am working for the company, it's quite amazing.
Is that the circle of life?
Maybe it is. Well, as a plasterer, maybe it is.
Well, you went quality from the start, mate. mate, is there any area that you particularly specialised in and what sort of put you into that space?
So during my time, commercial plastering was really my strong skill set, just due to the companies I worked for. But oddly, when I started my own company, I specialized in the high-end housing area. The pricing was a little bit trickier, the details and unique finishes, factoring in timeframes was also a little bit out of my comfort zone. It was definitely a much higher attention to detail. If I had started in the commercial area, I would have liked to, but I would have needed a bigger bank balance to kind of roll the materials and the costs over.
Yeah.
There's also a fair bit of liability that becomes involved when you're on those bigger commercial projects. But at the time, I sort of thought it was a good starting point in the high-end housing area.
Yeah, I just got to start somewhere.
That's it, yeah. You've got to dip your toe in and see what you can do.
Yeah, boots and all, boots and all. Mate, I guess with everything, what's your favourite and least favourite part about owning the business?
I'd have to say my favourite was definitely being your own boss and you know, you were creating whatever you made your business. You know, what person doesn't get enjoyment out of being empowered by making your own life decisions? A least favourite part would have definitely been the bookkeeping and the time needed to do quotes. Sometimes you'd invest lots without winning the jobs, and unfortunately it was just a part of the process that had to be done.
Yeah. Bookkeeping, hey? That's everybody's gripe.
Especially...
You'd rather be on the tools.
I'm a hands-on person. I was, you know, not a real sort of bookkeeping type and things like that, and you don't learn anything about it, and you sort of think you can go into a business and it'll all sort of work itself out, but you know, you probably need to do a course and things like that before you sort of go in, boots and all.
Yes, I think bookkeepers would agree you didn't need to do a course.
Yeah.
Not something you just say I'm going to do.
No.
No, fair enough. Mate, hindsight is a wonderful thing. What are some of the things you've learned only after starting the business?
I think importantly, I didn't have enough cash. So, you know, to have more cash initially to run the business definitely would be something I'd look back on. I also thought that my effort was the key to the business. But looking back, I would say that being smarter with less effort is the key. The right tools are a huge benefit. Probably should have had more focus on my capital and the right tools from the get-go. Systems is also another one. There are many ways to do plastering, but nothing beats low cost, right materials, right people, time efficient system, and lastly, the most important part, a good quality finish. You need a few different payers as well, or clients, so that you have options if things don't go to plan. And, you know, there's a famous saying, Ray, I'm sure you know it, you know, you don't put too many eggs in one basket.
Yeah, correct. Correct, mate, yes. And I guess that's you learn that along the way in the journey of it all. So, yeah, no, I agree with all that. And, mate, just what's your perspective on taking on an apprentice? And looking back on that, do you think it's the same now? Would you, if you had the opportunity again, would you do what you've done?
I think looking back, if I'd had more initial capital, I would have took one on from the get-go. But at the time, I really wanted to employ one, but the type of work I was doing, for me, it would have been going backwards with a lot of that tricky detail and trying to explain and things like that. For me to have to allocate the time to train, I just kind of didn't have it at that point. And my capital sort of dictated that. You know, my business wasn't mature enough at the time to put one on, but if I'd had more, I definitely would have considered it.
Yeah, I guess the word mature there in the business is right. I suppose you didn't have it long enough to be able to sustain somebody, I guess, looking back on that. Yeah, fair enough. And, I mean, we touched on the paperwork side of things. So how did you manage the paperwork side of things, not being a bookkeeper?
I did the paperwork myself, from banking, quoting, invoicing and estimating. Tax side of things, I tried a system called BankLink with an accounting firm. Probably wasn't the best way to go about it. I needed to have more tax and financial understanding of how to run the business before I was in it running it. I guess my plan rate was not as good as it could have been.
Yeah, hindsight, mate. It's wonderful. No, but that's what that happens, I guess. You just have the opportunity to look back and, you know, help other people going forward, I guess.
And that's always been my thing. I always love sharing my knowledge with people, whether it be from tools or having your own business. Having that experience when I sort of got out of my company, that's where really my skill set kind of excelled. You know, imparting with your knowledge and stuff like that is what I'm really passionate about and I enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's why you're a great fit here at Warbald, because you can help people from using the tools to actually running their own business. So I think that's a really good thing for us to have you on our in our squad, I guess, and have your knowledge available to us.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, and that's the only rap you'll get from me, Wiley. So I guess so I guess talking about all that in general, is there anything that you would change about all any of that process?
Definitely. I guess now, having been involved in organisations like the AWCIA, it's definitely worth being a member if you're starting up. You know, the amount of information that they can help you out with is just very worthwhile. At the time of starting my business, it was probably what I needed. And, you know, there's an app for just about everything nowadays, right?
True.
Invoicing, measuring up, takeoffs, estimating, site management, it's really endless. They have the knowledge also at the AWCI to put you in touch with the right people to help you when you're starting out.
Yeah.
There's nothing more valuable than that. Not only that, but when you start up, there are lots of things that jump out at you before that you never thought would. People not paying because of circumstances on site that are out of your control. It's important to have someone who can guide you through these moments.
Yeah, correct. Correct. Yeah, that's that makes a lot of sense, having like a big brother, I guess, helping you through.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're kind of out there and the builder's telling you that it's your fault and you've got it to the correct level of finish of what's in the standards, but, you know, a builder's holding sort of a gun to your head saying, I'm not going to pay you because it's your fault, possibly because the painter hasn't painted the wall right.
Yeah.
You've really got to know how do I fight that battle with the builder?
Yeah.
You know, is it in writing? An organisation like the AWCI be able to go, well, these are the standards for investing the wall. We can get someone to come and have a look at it for you. And then case closed, you know. And if you didn't have that kind of knowledge, then you may sort of just redone the work, cost yourself money, and your business starts going, losing money and going down the gurgler. Yeah. No, nobody wants that.
I can imagine it'd be quite daunting having customers or clients complaining about things and you feel like you're on your own and you don't have that support. You know you've done a good job, you just don't have the backing and someone saying, yes, that's what it's meant to be like. So
that's it, and too true. Like it's, you know, lots of things have changed now in trade schools and teaching where, you know, a lot of that stuff becomes more common knowledge. But definitely when I was involved in the trade, it wasn't very common knowledge of how to protect yourself, like, yeah, sort of, and things like that.
Yep, fair enough. So, mate, just with, I guess, one of the issues that a lot of people have with their own businesses and in general is how do you go with timelines and potential delays?
I guess these are challenging moments, Ray. Everyone wants things finished yesterday, right?
They do.
It's important that you work towards a schedule of when you think you can finish the project, you know, what's realistic. Some builders will want you to agree to tighter timelines, but you've got to stick to your guns a bit and don't overcommit. You consider plans B's and C's in the construction game. You know, material shortages happen, be prepared, have options or good substitutes in place for when things go wrong. Delays are common, deliveries are short, mistakes happen. You've got to build margin into your jobs and allow for these sort of situations, you know. If you price it all tight and you have a few things go wrong, very quickly there's no money there to sort of profit from.
Yeah.
And you've got to be making a profit, otherwise why would you do it?
Yeah, most definitely. You've got to be on top of a lot of things, don't you, when you own your own business. It's long days.
Yeah.
It doesn't finish when you put the tools down, that's for sure.
No, and that's another thing, you know, it's you don't realise there's that much happening in a business that you got to switch off and you got to have good mechanisms for allowing you to step outside of the business as well and realise that you got to switch off. You still got to have a life outside your own business.
Yeah, and I guess that's why looking back on things, it's you can pick holes in things you should have done better, but at the time you were just doing the best you could.
That's it, you know. Like I think at the end of the day, like you sort of, you give it a crack.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
Give it a crack, yep. Nothing wrong with that. So just as we talked about protection back there, did you ever need to use your business insurance?
No, I never needed to use it. It's very important though to make sure you have it for your company and for your employees so that everyone is covered. I mean, last thing you need is for someone to hurt themselves and next thing you know, you've got some sort of lawsuit and an amount of money that your company just doesn't have,
yeah,
right, to be able to get yourself out of the situation and pay for damages or whatever it would be.
Yeah, so necessary evil.
Definitely, yeah.
And we talked about the quoting, how long it takes and stuff like that. So did it always go to plan or is it a skill you need to master if you're going to be quoting for jobs as well?
I think it's definitely a skill you got to master. You have your wins and your losses there, but it's very important that you learn from them. Most mistakes I've found come from the plans not being clear in the detail, and I guess a builder's perception of what they thought, an architect's perception of what they thought, and the plasterer's perception of how I could actually achieve that. You need to understand, you know, more often than not, that things don't go as you expected from what I experienced. You need to sort of understand material needs, labor costs, time frame to complete the project, but never underestimate your own knowledge of certain builders that you work for and allow for these things. Do not sort of print yourself the best case scenario. If you do that, you'll lose every time. But if you work for a builder and you know nothing's ever ready and all this kind of stuff, when you're quoting a job, you've got to factor in those things. And it can also be too that maybe you're working for the same builder, but it's that supervisor that runs that job that's not organized, and you need to make sure that you work around him. And also too, I found many times, particularly when you're progressing with a job, sometimes you need to tell other trades that things are not ready for you, like sort of, or you help them by saying, oh, did you know that this is like sort of not ready yet? And builders love that. They love when a plasterer is out there helping them with their other trades. And you're telling the builder that I'm not going to be able to start that soon if this guy's not done that yet. They always would. You win heaps more work when you do that, because they're like, you're a supervisor for them and they love it.
Yeah, and you help them to tie it all in together, aren't you? Because that's their main goal, is to tie it in and make it as smooth as possible.
And I think too, lots of builders are all using trades like that, where, you know, the Sparkies are thinking about the plasterers, the plumbers are thinking about the Sparkies, and they're all working together and they're good mates. And that's how you get very good systems and very good processes that work well. You'd find as well, like, you know, you're probably buying a carton for a person here or there, and you're spending time like to develop those relationships, because everyone on site has an invested interest in things running smooth for them. Sparky needs to make his money, the plumber needs to make his money. You know, the floras, it all works in sync together.
Yeah, and I guess in amongst all that, there's a lot of people with a lot of opinions. And I guess, you know, opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one.
That's right.
So, you know, you've got to deal with all that as well. So, yeah, it's a big melting pot of, but everyone, I guess, is rowing in the right direction. It's just getting it to happen. So your input, I guess, is valuable for everybody involved.
Yeah, and I think too, like, it's not just, you know, you got to manage different personalities as well. It's like you got to understand that, you know, not one size fits all, and things are a bit different with these people, and we work differently in this scenario. It's not exactly all the same.
Yeah, so you got to be flexible. You can have your way, but it's got to be a bit flexible, I guess, is what the message is, isn't it, really? Get along with everyone.
Yeah.
Why can't we all just get along? Mate, without getting too dark, can you describe the factors that were involved in you closing your business?
Yeah, unfortunately, I had some back problems that kind of made me reevaluate, and I just thought it was a good time to change my career path. I had a lot of acute back pain at the time, and I just couldn't see myself being in the trade for another 20 or 30 years. You know, and in business as well, having a good support network helps, like family or even having a business partner. That's what helps carrying the load of the business easier. So at the time, I was doing it at a young age and alone. So those things together just led me to the decision to think it was a good time to close the business and possibly work for other people.
Yeah, sure. Well, congratulations for having a crack.
Yeah. I mean, when I look back, I had a lot of pressure on myself and I really wanted it to work. And I honestly would tell you, like, I felt like I failed, like, sort of when I closed my business. But I've never thought at the time that, I guess, I was so valuable in other areas to businesses, from, say, you know, all your experience that you'd had on the tools, being a foreman, working with manufacturers. You know, if I didn't have that sort of full picture of not only just an apprentice, a plasterer, but owning your own business, it helped me so much, like sort of further on down the track.
Yeah. Mate, I think you would have failed if you didn't have a crack. So,
yeah,
you know, you can feel good about that. mate, so have you heard of Master Builders? And if you have, would you recommend them?
Yes, they're a very similar organisation to the AWCI. However, the AWCI is a little bit more tailor-made to our plastering industry.
Yeah, for sure. How'd you go about advertising your new business? Was it social media used or...?
At the time, social media was not what it was now. I guess you had Facebook, but it wasn't really like people were advertising their business on there. I'd say now, Facebook's probably the biggest driver for small business. Instagram's also another good platform. There are plastering contractor groups out there that share industry knowledge and they share current market rates. I think there's one also called Jobs on SEQ. It's another great page. But I mean, I just look at that and I think you never used to have that. You needed to kind of become friends with a local plasterer, or maybe you kept in touch with your apprenticeship buddies or people that were in plastering that you went to trade school with. Whereas now you can jump online and you can see exactly what people are paying for different aspects of the trade. They advertise work on there daily. You know, it's amazing. Like the work is just so easy to access and grab.
Yeah. It's a whole new world with that social media. I guess it's, I'm a bit older than you, but in my day, the Yellow Pages was the, I know I don't look it, but the Yellow Pages was the go-to. So you'd have, if you wanted to be first in the Yellow Pages, your business had to be AAA Plastering. And then there was AAAA Plastering to try and get in first. So, yes, things have certainly changed in that space in the world. And, yeah, you're so much more available now. And, you know, I guess that makes things more competitive, though. So I guess, you'd have to be, you know, you've got to have a good sort of name to, and obviously you've got to display your jobs now. On social media, so yeah.
And I think too, it's that referral thing and stuff as well that, you know, a lot of people never used to have that transparency to say, well, this is a business and these are my referrals, and you can sit there and look at all the commentary of the great work and stuff like that. Whereas maybe back in the day, it was more like that person that you finished the job with needed to speak to somebody else, which gave you a great referral and ended up in turn giving you business. Yeah. Whereas now it's like you can do one job and, you know, it can be there for everyone to see and anyone can access it who's looking for a job and can see that, you know, or hear about the quality if you finish.
Yeah, definitely. So work referrals are very important, aren't they?
Oh, they're huge. Yeah. You know, but I reckon too, like once you do a few jobs, it just snowballs from there. People find it hard to get trades just to get to their jobs. You know, I found it easy to win jobs by just being on time, communicating, just be reasonable with your pricing, and look after your clients, and they just look after you. It's that simple.
Yeah. So did you list yourself in any places such as Renovators Directory or anything like that?
Yeah, well, I use a few old school things. It's exactly as you said before, Ray, like Yellow Pages. I think I use White and sort of White Pages and local newspaper ads.
So you are as old as me.
Yes, I am. Maybe a little bit younger, but... and High Pages, I guess this is more now, or Gumtree, has changed things up. You know, people are able to post jobs now with pricing and what they'd like them done for. I guess you've got to be a bit careful with that kind of platform, as I really do think plasterers knows what's required to finish a job and they're experts in their industry. But if the price is right, what a great way to win jobs online without being there, you know what I mean? You're sitting there and you're looking at the job saying, okay, you know you could do it for this, it's worth that. Perfect.
Yeah.
It's like fishing with jelly knot.
You're allowed to do that, are you?
I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess that there's no cost involved in that, is there? As opposed to driving to site and, you know, all that sort of bizzo involved and your time and effort.
Exactly. There's a huge benefit there.
Yeah, most definitely.
I mean, if people say you couldn't find a job, you'd have to be blind.
Yeah. So going back a little bit, how did you go about deciding what tools to invest in your business? because, you know, tools aren't cheap a lot of the times, but they certainly, they make you money. They don't lose you money. So how do you decide that, mate?
I did have a bit of an old school train of thought when I was in my younger years. I actually thought I could do more by hand than I could with automated tools, for sure. There's a lot of people out there that still do.
That's a young bloke thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, but once I started subcontracting, and, you know, you don't get paid for holidays and super, you quickly work out that you need to become more efficient. And once I started investing in tools, which I wish I did sooner, you get twice, if not three times more done in a day with less effort.
Yeah, well, that certainly makes sense, mate, doesn't it? And if you've got good quality tools like the Warboard ones, then away you go. There's no looking back, is there?
No, I used, you know, Warboard tools and Tape Pro extensively, like when I started out plastering.
Yeah.
And I guess you need to consider too what takes up, you know, most of your time and creates stress on your body. You know, you invest in those areas and you prolong your body or your employees' health in the trade, and that's critical for you being successful. I mean, imagine if you got an employee that works for you that does an excellent job. Why wouldn't you invest in a tool that can improve his speed and prolongs his working career for your business? And that's a tax write-off. It just makes too much sense.
Yeah. And I guess the space of tools, it's growing all the time. There's technology is just pushing all the time and things are changing, and, you know, we're with stress on the body and all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of tools, you know, in 20 years' time, God knows what we'll be using, what sort of tools we'll be using. But I know Warboard will be ahead of it all.
I guess that's why I love working for Warboard. Like, you know, we're constantly sort of testing, refining and trying to find these new little edges. It really is what I'm sort of passionate about, you know. I often do look back and think I should have invested in tools earlier, and I might not ended up at Warboard if I'd invested in tools earlier, because maybe my back would still be gone.
So, mate, getting back to age, I didn't want to have a shot at you, but might notice that you're bald and I'm not, mate. So how did that all come about if you're so much younger than me, as you say you are?
It's actually to do with plastering, Ray, I think.
Oh, yeah, this will be good.
No, I think, like, when I was holding up sheets, when I started out plastering, I actually tried to hold them up to my head than my hands.
Yes, I can see. That'll explain why the top of your head's flat then.
True story.
Well, lucky this is a podcast and not a visual one, mate, because you're painting a bit of a picture of yourself there, mate.
Genetics could be involved, but I don't think so.
So you're trying to say every plaster should have a flat head if they're going to go all right, or bald head.
Yeah, I think so.
Right, am I?
I think many years ago, CSA actually used to bring out these hats, and they had this padding in the hats, and they were for actually lifting up the sheets.
Right.
I must have missed out on it.
Yeah, I think you may have. I think you may. That might have contributed to your back problems, maybe, and your neck and all the rest of that, if you're carrying sheets on your head. Nothing like the old days, eh?
Oh, that's it.
Good on you. So, mate, to wrap it all up, what's one piece of advice you would like to leave people to consider that are going in on their own?
I guess you've got to have a good plan from the start. You know, invest in yourself and take your time to slowly build up. You know, seek advice from organisations like the AWCI to help equip you with the paperwork tools or accounting software you need. And as simple as if you don't have a mentor, they might be able to organise someone to tell you their history of how they got started and get the right tools for the business to make you efficient. That's about it.
That's about it. All right, mate. Fair enough. Yeah. Thanks for that. Great chat.
Thanks, Ray.
Catch you next time.
See you then.
See you, buddy.